On Monday, August 8th, Tall Can Audio hits 1,000 episodes.
Wait, that's still on? Who could possibly still care?
And the gang is all here to celebrate.
It's euphoric. It's got to be close to nirvana. It's outstanding.
For the first time ever, Maddie, Michaela, Rob, and Matt are all live in studio together.
It's happening, you guys! It's happening! Oh, my God, guys! Oh, my God! I wish you all were here!
Is this likely to go well?
Just check my notes here. No!
At least it will make a lot of noise.
Boom. Here comes the boom.
1,000 pods and 1,000 pints.
I don't think I've ever been as proud in my entire life.
TCA 1000 drops Monday, August 8th, wherever you find low-quality podcasts.
Fuck, it's out of control. Shit.
This is Tall Can Audio.
We're not here to take part, we're here to take over.
Nice to be back in the garden, eh?
Woo!
Hello and welcome to Tall Can Audio. I am Michaela, he is Matt. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shrides, S-C-H-R-E-I-D-S. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing really good. Glad that you have returned once again. I don't know if you caught our show on Wednesday with John Rodenberg. I know you were looking to avoid it as he was going to conduct your performance review right there on the live on the air. But I framed it to him that we had sent you down to TSN 1200. We loaned you to TSN 1200, and on Friday you would be recalled to the big club. So I'm glad you're back.
I am very happy I'm back. Yes, I did tune in. I'm a consummate professional. I'm always looking for constructive criticism. So I thought, hey, my performance review, let's do this. It was a shining review.
It was a bummer really from this side. I was looking for him to rip you apart or something. Nothing but glowing words. Total dud.
So. I know. It's so boring. I'll admit, like, I hate hearing people talk about me or like talking about myself, especially good stuff. Like if you want to trash talk me, I'm like, yeah, go for it. But like, it's weird listening to people say nice things about you.
Yeah.
At least I find it weird. So I was sitting there in the car with my husband and we were listening to it. And I was like, I feel so weird about this. I appreciated the kind words, sure. JR. And I want to give him a shout out, 555 Brewing.
Yeah.
I love that place. We went, yeah. So he didn't drink it, obviously. He was just holding it because dry January is continuing for him. But after my husband and I got married in late 2019, we went to Prince Edward County for what I called at the time a mini moon, which our honeymoon ended up getting canceled. So evidently it just ended up being our honeymoon,
yes,
as of right now. And we went there for the week after our wedding. And in addition to wineries, they've got a ton of breweries. So we did a little brewery tour one day, and 555, I think, was one of the places we went to like for drinks before dinner or something. It was my favorite spot the whole week.
Nice.
Great spot.
Yeah, no, I've heard.
Whenever COVID's over.
Yeah, no, like I said to him on there, right, like it went from kind of being the spot for wineries to then the brewery started to pop up. My parents have camped down there before, and they said like there's flyers and stuff around of like vans that'll come get you to do like tours of whatever you want, right? Hit as many of these different places you want. It sounds like it's become a booming little spot for, I mean, I've been there a pile of times. It's gorgeous for camping or spending a week or whatever, but becoming quite the spot as well for beers and wines. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of beers and wine, Matt, what are you drinking today?
Just before the show, got a little beer mail from the Bob Cajun Brewing Company. Bob Cajun's a little town in central Ontario, obviously most well known for where you can see the constellations one star at a time, as our good friend Gord would tell you. This is the winterized Belgian White Stout. Have never had this one before. There's a lot going on there. Yeah, and they say it's kind of this combination or a mashup, as they call it, of this kind of citrus and coriander with like a chocolate and cocoa kind of stout. So I'm intrigued and have never had it before. I'm looking forward to getting into it. What about you?
So I am actually, it was perfect timing. Speaking of brewery deliveries or beer deliveries, yesterday I got my second installment of my small batch dispatch subscription. So I have the privilege of cracking open a can from that one today, and I'm going with the unnamed pale ale by Mash Paddle Brewing Co., which is out of Brantford, Ontario.
Brantford, Ontario, a city I know all too well, to be honest with you.
Good old Brantford.
Yeah, the armpit of Ontario. As I
was, you know what?
Here.
I was gonna hold off from saying it, but I'm glad you did. I lived in the Niagara region for about 4 years of my life. So anything down that way, I think I've heard called the armpit, unpretty body parts. Sure. So I feel like we can say that.
Yeah.
Because we've at least been to those areas.
I spent several years down in that area as well, right in Brantford. And then still up until, you know, last year before COVID hit and anything, I do some coaching and we run one of our one or two of our main events of the year was down in Brantford. So there was lots of trips and had plenty from the, I believe it's called the Bell City Brewing Company is the other one in Brantford, or one of the other ones in Brantford. It was always pretty good, but I could pass on the town. The beer's been okay.
Sorry, I'm stalling. I was getting a photo of my beer for you.
I shouldn't have interrupted. I will take that moment then to say, if you haven't heard it yet, you should go back and check out episode 785. That is with John Rodenberg of TSN 1200. Lots of talk about his career and trying to manage a sports radio station through a sportsless time period was interesting. He had some great stories to tell in general, and really good guy. I know you've had plenty of dealings with him as well. But there is one thing that I got a couple of tweets about today. The people were not going to allow me to forget. This was the day where I am to ask you for your thoughts on Sunday night's Royal Rumble.
Oh, yeah. So I watched it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to make myself sound really old right now. But you remember the thing that happened not that long ago with the whole GameStop and Wall Street and Reddit and all that stuff, right? Did you see the video that we kind of went viral of this woman who was like, you know what? I know this stuff. I'm going to explain it to you. And then she just completely dogs trying to explain it. And she's like, so these guys, they got hedges. And so that's me trying to explain the Royal Rumble. I watched it. There were guys in tight pants and Speedos that I don't understand why they don't wear shirts, but they don't. And then there were some girls who were wrestling as well. And they
were slightly more shirted.
They had more shirts on, which is good.
Sure.
And less, I will say this about the WWE. I really like what they've done with the women's division in the last couple of years, and that it is no longer a sexualized spectacle. No.
Bra and panties in a Jello fight match and whatever.
They're actually treating them like they do the rest of their athletes or their personalities. Sure. So I know Bianca won.
That's correct. Bianca Belair.
Bianca Belair won. I did not. I will not lie to you. I did not stay up for the men's Royal Rumble because
Canada's own Edge
won. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So Josh was he happy that Edge? I can't remember if he was happy that Edge won. I think he likes Edge.
Yeah.
All I know with the men's side is that I love Kevin Owens.
Yes. Right out of Montreal or Maryville, Maryville, Quebec, Canada, I believe is where he's billed from.
Yeah. Exactly. I love him.
He's great.
But that's about as far as my opinions on. But here's what I didn't get. I sat down with Josh to watch it.
Yep.
And then there were these other matches on as well. And I thought they're all just getting in the ring at once, and whoever is left standing is left standing.
Right.
And then he's like, no, there's other matches. And I was like, okay.
This is gonna be way longer than you want it to be.
So long. And listeners, anybody who's followed me in the last couple of weeks knows how difficult it is for me to stay up past 9:30. Like, this was far past my bedtime.
Yes.
So I tapped out around, let's say, 9:30. I went to bed. Because the only thing I stay up late for is the Sens getting their asses handed to them by other teams. So, yeah, that's that. Those are my thoughts on the Royal Rumble. Thank you for tuning in to my wrestling podcast. Clearly, I am a wrestling expert.
I think you were at least able to bring Bianca's name to the table, proved that that you gave it a shot. I think that's plenty fair. So,
and I will say this: I was rooting for her because they did a special on her right before.
Yep.
the match or the show started, and
kind
so she was like
a little bit
you knew what they were doing. But she and Charlotte Flair and Bayley are like the three women I know the most about, so I'm like, well, if one of them wins, I'm happy. Bayley's got a whole like a you know, I know she turned heel and yep. She's got a Karen haircut now.
Yes,
oh my god, it's burned into my brain. Josh talks about it nonstop and he thinks I care. Oh. And every now and then I have to remind him, like, I don't
text
care.
Me Josh, I care, I'll listen.
I you know what, I'll tell him too. Yeah. I need to give him some kind of outlet. But I do have, okay, so what were your thoughts on the Royal Rumble?
I didn't watch it.
You serious?
I am. No, I'm serious. I didn't watch it. I think I watched The Sense. Didn't they play on Sunday night? You watched
The
Rumble?
Oh, my God. You mean to tell me I sat through a wrestling event and the wrestling fan on this podcast did not?
Yeah, that's what happened. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. So I'm the resident wrestling expert now.
Yeah. I saw the highlights and stuff after. I can't remember. I was watching something else, and then it sort of slipped my mind. And yeah, I don't. For a while, I had the WWE Network, which is what it's on now. And then I can't remember, something happened, and it was like you can still order. I couldn't get the network, and so it was like you're gonna have to buy the pay per view for like $50. So it's like, nope, right? Like,
yeah, not doing that.
And then just kind of moved along. So. I definitely did check in on it. I wanted to know what happened, all that stuff, but no, I didn't see it. So that's why we had to check with you. I'm glad you were up to date on that.
I'm glad one of us is a wrestling fan,
exactly,
Matt.
Exactly, taking this seriously. We appreciate that.
I'm a consummate professional. I do have a question for you, though, okay. Before we get into some real sports talk, because I meant to ask you this last week and I completely forgot.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask it in the beginning of the podcast so I don't forget. So I gave you a recommendation on what brewery to order from a couple weeks ago, Ridge Rock. You did. Mm-hmm. Well done. I am now asking for your recommendation on where I should order beer from next.
Okay. I got two for you. And I think it's because when we had our little beer trade-off there in December, I had some stuff for you. You had some stuff for me. I think you had said you hadn't been there recently or hadn't tried much. I always like to send people to the Nita Beer Company.
Okay.
So if you haven't had too much of their stuff, I would suggest that. If you have, though, the other place that I always like to send people to is the Vimy Brewing Company. Their red is terrific. Their stout, to me, might be the best craft beer in Ottawa. I've said it 100 times on this show. I put their stout is what's normally on tap in the keg fridge in the studio. So those are the two that I always start with. And then they've got some other stuff going on right now. They've got a pale ale, they've got a cream ale, they've got a few different things going on. So those would be the two. I don't know that I want to push you to one or the other, but those are the two I'm going to say. Pick one of those two, and then you're going to have to keep us posted.
Okay. Well, I think I can make both happen in the next couple of weeks. I'll prioritize Vimy just because I haven't been there in a long time.
They're good guys.
They're great. I used to love going to their space.
Yes.
The tap room they have is awesome. And I've never had a beer from them that I didn't like. Right. So their cream ale in particular, that's kind of my go-to every time I go there. And it is tasty.
It really is.
And Nita, same thing. Like I went to Nita over the summer and I remember thinking, God, I would love to sit in this tap room and have a beer, but it was, I think indoor dining was allowed at the time. I just wasn't comfortable with it.
I wasn't doing it either. Yeah.
Yeah. It's obviously not allowed right now, so I won't be able to do that, but I will definitely.
So from there, the Percy Mapleton Porter, fantastic.
Okay.
We've done the Mr. Brown has gone coconuts talk before. That's not your deal. So I'm not going to push that again. But they've got a lot of things in there that there's a sour, and I can't remember the names of them off the, but it, I mean, it's right there on the website. You'll find, if that's your deal. They've got some really nice stuff in there and some rotating taps as well. They have a Brute IPA that's really good. So I think you'll find plenty in there if in either place, really.
Yep. I think it's hard to go wrong at either of those spots. So thank you very much.
We have a guest. Well, we should announce our next guest.
Yes, we should.
I'm so pumped about this.
I will let you do it since you set everything up. This is your get. I will let you take care of it.
It's our friend Hoffley's get. The guy keeps coming through for this podcast. So Chris Hoffley over at OSEG, shout out to you. But next Wednesday morning in the guest slot, we got Rob Monday, we got Michaela Friday, and we're keeping the Wednesday morning slot open for guests when we can get them. And we have a really good one, especially this time of year, especially with everything that's going on. Paul Lapalisse, the new... I guess not that new. I mean, he hasn't coached a game yet, but he's been here for like a year. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to... But Paul Lapalisse, the head coach of the Red Blacks, will be on the podcast next Wednesday. Hoffley says that he's a big wine guy. He's not sure about his beer take. So that's always the first thing that we dive deep on and have to find out about. But we'll have a ton of questions for him just in terms of what, you know, last season's process was like when it kind of fell apart. We've got a new quarterback. It's kind of free agent season, how he's looking at the team going into next year. I'm fascinated to hear, you know, kind of his take on everything that has gone down over the last little while around the CFL and certainly around the Ottawa Red Blacks.
Yeah, for sure. And there's been plenty to talk about. So it'll be great to get Coach Lapo on the show. And you're right, it feels like he's the new coach, but he really has been technically here for what would have been an entire season already, but there was no season. So we're still waiting for him to coach a game.
Yep.
Whenever that does happen. So yeah, looking forward to having Coach Lapalisse on the show next week. And you know what? We may as well get to the Red Blacks talk right off the hop because we're talking about the Red Blacks anyway.
Yep.
There was some Red Blacks news on Sunday night as I was settling in to watch the Royal Rumble, Matt. There was some major CFL news that broke where we found out that who was supposed to be Red Blacks quarterback, Nick Arbuckle, mm-hmm. I guess it started with Matt Nichols being released by the Argos. And as soon as that happened, you know, we've seen all of these quarterbacks and big name players restructure their contracts with their CFL teams throughout the offseason. Wasn't happening with Arbuckle or Nichols. So you had a feeling that there was going to be a switcheroo. And sure enough, there was. Argos released.
The old switcheroo.
The Argos released Matt Nichols. Shortly after that, the Red Blacks released Nick Arbuckle. And then Nichols signed in Ottawa and Arbuckle signed in Toronto. And I have processed many feelings about this throughout the week, but I'll get your thoughts on it first, Matt.
Yeah, I should mention, before I give my thoughts, I was pumped this week to see a brand new episode of the Mouchoir podcast is out with
yes!
you and Janine back on the microphone for, again, kind of like Lapo, right? It seems like, you know, you've been around, but not for a while, right? Like, it hadn't been much happening.
Seems like it's been a while.
So that was awesome. And if you're into the CFL, into the Red Blacks, highly recommend the Mouchoir podcast as our friend here, Screeds, and Janine dove deep. But... I got to tell you, I've watched this week what feels like people talking themselves into being okay with this. And I have no problem with Matt Nichols being the quarterback for the Red Blacks. He's perfectly capable. I think he can do the job. He's got a good relationship with the head coach here. I think all that fits. But the excitement level a year ago when Nick Arbuckle signed was off the charts, and maybe to the point where it was a little ridiculous. I'm not sure, right? The guy, I think he has 7 starts. Is that correct?
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's 7 exactly in his time with Calgary. He really stepped in for when Bo Levi Mitchell was hurt. Like, that's it.
And he looked good. And I was happy to have him. I was one of those people that was really excited, and maybe we set ourselves up. Like, we'll never know now. I guess we'll see what he does with the Argos on to what he was going to be here. But, like, to me, that was the guy, right? That was the get in free agency that year. This was a guy who was ready to step out of the backup role and lead a team, had all these tools. He was only, I think, 26 years old, like, really ready to do the job. And I was pumped about it. And it seems like now, and again, this isn't a slight at all on Matt Nichols, but it seems like... now that he's gone, we're willing to just pretend we weren't that stoked or talk ourselves into Matt Nichols. And again, I feel like I'm talking in circles a little bit because I don't think we have to talk ourselves into Matt Nichols. I think his reputation speaks for itself. But there does seem to be, I think calling it revisionist history would be too strong, but like pretending that we weren't as pumped as we were when Nick Arbuckle signed. Did you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I definitely see a little bit of that. And I'll admit, like, I was on the Nick Arbuckle train before he even got here. The second we knew that Dominic Davis and Jonathan Jennings were not going to be the quarterbacks of the future for the Red Blacks, which was pretty early on in that season, I wanted Nick Arbuckle. Yes. You knew he was a free agent at the end of that season. I know his sample size was short, and I still think that, you know, it is still his sample size is still too short. Mm-hmm. To fully judge what he's going to be as a starting quarterback in the CFL for a full season.
Well, he could flame out in Toronto. He could dominate the league. We don't know yet. We'll see.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Both things can happen. Somewhere in the middle can happen. Who knows? But I wanted him here because he was, I don't want to say low-hanging fruit because that doesn't give him enough credit, but no. He was definitely the hottest commodity that was readily available that off season. And I thought he would be a perfect fit for the Red Blacks. And he certainly seemed it. They traded for his rights. He signed here.
Yep.
They very quickly made him the face of the franchise. He and his wife settled down. They had a kid here.
Right.
They got very settled in the city and it just seemed like a natural fit. And I was so pumped to watch this guy as a Red Black. And so getting the news that he wasn't even the fact that they were having trouble restructuring his contract was making me a little nervous, and then finding out that that wasn't going to happen as a fan, it definitely was very disappointing.
Sure was.
I was super disappointed. Now, I said this on the podcast, like whether it's Matt Nichols or Nick Arbuckle, the Red Blacks quarterback situation is vastly improved from what it was in 2019.
Unquestionably.
Like there's no, and you know, you could talk about Matt Nichols and his health and you know, his consistency, but he has been a quarterback in this league for a very long time, and he's got a lot of experience, and you know what, he's had some success, and he's got a great relationship with Paul LaPolice.
Right.
So that makes me like no matter what, I'm happy, I guess, in that it's not like we have to go back to the quarterbacks who, with all due respect to Dominic Davis and Jonathan Jennings, just did not work out here.
Right.
I know Dom Davis is still going to be our backup, and I actually think that's a good role for him.
I think that's fine as well, yeah.
But he just didn't work as a starter here.
No.
And I think that no matter what, the quarterback situation for the Red Blacks improved. And I'm very much looking forward to what Matt Nichols can do here with, he's got a great relationship with the coach. He said in his press conference, I played my best football in TD Place. So that's got to make Red Blacks fans pretty excited. It's nice to see him on this side of the ball. Nick Arbuckle on the other side, Ryan Dinwiddie was his offensive coordinator in Calgary. He's now the head coach in Toronto. So, you know, he's also kind of going to an environment that he's a little more familiar with the personnel.
Yep.
Right. So I'm not as upset as I was initially. I think I've
processed
it a little bit. Yeah. But in the moment I was not happy. Yeah. But you know, at the end of the day, I just feel like, this is such a vast improvement, from the quarterback situation in 2019. So I have a hard time being upset. Listen, we got to see what happens.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah.
Like there's any number of situations that could unfold here. Nick Arbuckle could absolutely light it up. He may not. Sure. Same with Matt Nichols. I hope Nick Arbuckle does well in Toronto. Janin made a point on our podcast this week that like the CFL is at its best when its quarterbacks are shining.
Yes.
And I think Nick Arbuckle having a great and bright future ahead of him is the best kind of storyline you can have if you're a CFL fan. But I've come to terms with it. And I still think that no matter what, we get a great quarterback here and let's see what he can do. He deserves a chance to prove fans right or wrong.
Yep. No, and
I'm
completely with you on that. I think Matt Nichols is absolutely capable of doing the job. And I think it's possible that, you know, he may do it better than Nick Arbuckle with this coaching staff, right? We don't know, as you've suggested. So, time will tell, and we'll ask Coach Lapo next week on the podcast about that relationship, about how he thinks Matt Nichols will do here. And I don't want to go too far down the road, but I'm going to throw it out there as a bit of a teaser. Our buddy Hoffley, who keeps lining him up for us, has suggested that before the season starts, pretty good chance we'll get Matt Nichols on the show as well. So we'll ask him. Yeah, that's what we do here. Well, that's what we ask Chris Hoffley to do here. But that's how we get things done on this podcast. And we'll ask him, you know, what his expectations are as well. So all of that coming up. Really exciting time, though, around the CFL with free agency going on. And, you know, it looks like with the amount of money being thrown around and the contracts being locked up, they're expecting to play this year in some form or another. There will be a season, and that's probably the best news of all of it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, what that season looks like, I think there's still a lot of questions about, but I have a lot more optimism for the CFL season right now. I know we're so far out, we're farther into the pandemic and all that, but yeah, I think you're right. I think we're probably looking forward to a CFL season, and that is a very good thing.
Cannot wait.
Yeah, that's a very good thing for Canada, Canadian football fans, all of us. Very, very good thing to look forward to the CFL. So with that, I guess, you know what, let's touch on the other football game that's happening this week. I don't know if you've heard about the NFL, but they have this, their championship game is kind of a big deal. And it's called the Super Bowl. So it's not just a bowl. Super Bowl.
Not this bowl. This bowl.
That is super. This bowl.
This
it
bowl.
Is super.
It's so super.
So the Super Bowl is happening this Sunday for those of you who haven't heard. And for those of you who haven't heard, Tom
Brady
and Patrick Mahomes.
Following up the Royal Rumble. But I mean, it'll do it
fast.
Yeah,
that's true. Just rude to put them the following week. Come on, man.
Yeah.
So you got Tom Brady on one side, you got Patrick Mahomes on the other, Tampa Bay, Kansas City. I mean, there's a million different storylines going on here. Greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady versus quite possibly the up-and-coming greatest quarterback of our generation, I guess, in Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, Tampa Bay has home field advantage for the first time in Super Bowl history.
But Kansas City has Mahomes field advantage. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You're just letting that hang like you absolutely should have. Just crickets.
All right, that's all, folks. Right. I'm out.
Yes, it's a good stout. Yes, I got to tell you, right. It's a good stout.
There, yeah. How's that for your taste, Matt?
Yeah, better than my jokes.
So I will put this out there. I mean, I know as we record this, it is Thursday, and I know that predictions, I like to wait for, you know, Sunday morning to get my predictions locked in, but, I'm going to ask you right off the bat, who are you taking in this game, Matt?
I got Kansas City. I think, you know, from my thoroughly uneducated position, it's a very well-rounded team. I like what they do. Certainly like Mahomes. The things they've dodged over the last, have you heard about this barber? This barber test positive and like half the teams lined up to get their haircut from, like, geez, like it's Super Bowl week. Nobody needs a haircut. I'm sorry. Like everybody just stay home. So there's all kinds of weird stuff like that going on. Look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to be any sort of an expert on the NFL. I haven't watched this year even as much as I do in most years, which was surprising to me. I thought, especially through the fall when there was very little sports going on, I would get more into it. For some reason, I just didn't. And so, you know, from what I've watched, mainly through the playoffs, I like Kansas City a little bit better. But Tom Brady has a bit of a knack for showing up in these big moments. Even at 107 years old, I would not count him out. Before I ask you for your premature prediction, I do got to ask you the more emotional question. Like, have you and your Patriots love, has that followed Tom to Tampa? Has that been your second team to watch? And, you know, I assume you'll be rooting for him.
Oh, that's a weighted question. let's just, okay. It took until the NFC Championship for me to finally cheer for Tom Brady and Tampa
Bay. Okay.
Yeah. I started the season like, you know, fresh perspective after a mutual breakup. Like, I want nothing but the best for him.
Sure.
And then he started having success with that new girl he's with.
Exactly.
And I just wanted to see nothing but him crash and burn, especially when the Patriots were losing. Cause you know, it's like your ex is happy with his new girlfriend and you've got nothing.
You're dating a dud. Yeah, exactly.
or you're still single, swiping left on Tinder.
WWE, like it's.
I had a hard time finding happiness with this, but finally I came to terms with it. And I don't know why. I have a very controversial opinion. I'm not a huge fan of Aaron Rodgers.
Really?
Not that he's not a good, I think he's a great quarterback.
No, of course, yeah.
I get really sick of his pouty, his basically every time he loses in the playoffs, he pouts and throws the rest of his team under the bus, which lo and behold was exactly what he did after this one.
That's true.
And there's just something about the guy. I don't want to see it between the two of them. Like it was kind of like Tom Brady was the lesser of two evils. And I chose Tom Brady and I decided that, I want success for him. So I'm rooting for him on Sunday, but it is one of those games where, I won't be upset if he loses. Right. I love Patrick Mahomes. I love watching Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
I have a hard time. I don't know why. I have a hard time liking him because I think, when Tom Brady was still with the Patriots, Patrick Mahomes was the up and comer and kind of the storyline was dethroning Tom Brady. So I was like, well, nah. And I got very defensive of my boy.
Yes.
And of course the Patriots beat KC in the AFC championship game the last time they won the Super Bowl before Tom left. Mm-hmm. And I was very happy about that. But I've always had this little bit of it's jealousy of Patrick Mahomes for some reason. No one likes the new kid. But I've also accepted the fact that he's an incredibly talented quarterback and so much fun to watch. So I have a hard time. This is where I'm at right now with my prediction. I have a hard time betting against Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl, and I have a hard time betting against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. So I don't know. I've gone back and forth with who I actually think is going to win several times. Right now where I'm at, I think it's going to be KC, and I think it's going to be a very close game.
But I agree with that much, yeah.
Like you're looking at, so just for context, for those who don't know, like you're looking at Patrick Mahomes and KC trying to win back-to-back Super Bowls for the first time since Tom Brady and the Patriots did it. So like that's what you're looking at, right? Like how do you choose this? And I also think, KC's got some injuries to their O-line that I'm a little nervous about. I know Patrick Mahomes is healthy, but how healthy are you when you're recovering from a concussion? Tom Brady threw three consecutive picks in the NFC championship game and still won.
Yes. That's hardly confidence building.
Like no matter what way you look at this, it's like, you can make a case for either team.
That makes it the most fun. Don't you think
true.
That's what's going to make this entertaining for somebody like me who doesn't have a horse. I want to see Tom Brady lose. I'm that spiteful guy. To me, he carried that from New England with him. I don't like the Patriots. I don't like Tom Brady. And it's because he's a wealthy, good looking guy married to a supermodel who just never has any problems ever. He's just always awesome. And screw that guy. Right. So I'm riding with Kansas City. But I fully expect that this is going to be an entertaining game. You do have at opposite ends of their career, but two of the best quarterbacks in the game, which is exactly what I want in a Super Bowl. A couple of gunslingers, and let's just see what happens.
Yeah, that's just it. Like, let's hope for an entertaining game.
Yeah.
Right? Let's avoid the, as much as it wasn't boring for me because I'm a Patriots fan, but let's avoid the Patriots, LA Chargers.
That was awful. The worst Super Bowl ever. Ever.
I realize I'm biased in this because when your team is in it, I don't care how boring it is, you're stressed.
No, of course.
But it was objectively an incredibly boring game. I want a 45-43.
That'd be amazing.
Score.
I don't even care at that point who wins. Just give me that. Give me all night shootout.
The real question that no one is asking themselves, Matt, is will the weekend live up to the incredibly high bar that has been set by J-Lo and Shakira? I mean, the obvious answer is no, but it's an interesting point of discussion, in my opinion.
This is the part of the show, when I said I'm uneducated about the NFL, I am even far more uneducated about the weekend. This is where old man Matt shines through. I don't know. I was more comfortable. I knew more about Shakira and J-Lo last year. To me, that was more in my, my wheelhouse. I don't know. I know the one song that I can't feel my face. I know that song. I'm sure he's had a million more hits since then. That's the one I know. That's the one I'll be waiting for. But the halftime show is not for me, right? It is not for the guy who was going to watch the Super Bowl no matter what. It's to bring in someone who probably wasn't going to watch it and see if they'll stick around for the second half. So I think it was a big get. I think it's obviously a big name for them. But I don't know a freaking thing. What was it, the one? You'll know that 2 or 3 years ago at the Grey Cup, Alicia Cara?
Yeah, Alicia Cara.
Had never heard that name before in my life. And I'm not even trying to be a douche. Obviously, she was big enough to land the Grey Cup halftime show as a Canadian musician. Like, incredible. I had no idea who that person was. I did not recognize one song. And it was one of the saddest moments in my life to just be like, this is it, man. You're out. Like, you are no longer a part of even pretending to be with it. And we did this before, the Simpsons quotes. And I don't even know what it is.
I used to be with it. Then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with, isn't it? And what's it? Seems weird and scary to me. Exactly. It'll happen to you.
And it happened to me. It absolutely happened to me.
It happens to all of us, man. And listen, I like The Weeknd in the way that, like, I've heard his songs on the radio, right. And I like the songs I've heard. But, like, I know I'm not like a fan in that I've listened to his albums or like know his non-hit songs. But like J-Lo, I've been a massive fan of J-Lo since I was 12 years old.
Yep.
So last year's Super Bowl performance was massive for me, and it lived like I set that bar so high in my head, and it exceeded it. I thought it was one of the best Super Bowl performances. It's been one of the best halftime show performances I've ever seen.
Yeah,
you know, not just the energy, the dancing, and the song choices, but the, you know, the political undertones of it with the kids in cages. Like Jesus Christ, singing "Born in the USA" while draped in a Puerto Rican flag. Like, oh my God.
Yeah,
it was. I've watched that video. I watched it 3 times this week.
Man, you're bringing back some memories I almost forgot. Like, I'm going to have to go back and watch this.
Oh, no, you have to rewatch it.
This is going to be like Shania and the dog sled. Like, I'm going to have to go back.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm going to wax poetic about it. So listeners, strap yourselves in. But like, if you go and watch it on YouTube, I think it's got something like 125 million views. Wow. And I swear to God, I make up a portion of those.
What is your, do you have a favorite Super Bowl halftime show?
Is it weird if I say that one?
No, it's not at all.
I could probably do like a top five.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm just going to commit to it. That's my favorite Super Bowl halftime.
You know what it might be for me? And again, not my style of music at all. And at least I recognized the name and knew most of the songs. This is maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Katy Perry was awesome.
Shark.
Yes. Yeah. It was terrific. And she was cute as a button, but she played all her hits and she was belting them out. I have no idea how many of these people lip sync versus do them live. I have my leanings, my guesses, but she was awesome. And I didn't go into that one expecting, like most of these, right, this isn't for me, but I thought she did a really great halftime show. I thought hers was really, really good. And normally they'll throw you, you know, every other year, every third year, you know, a Bruce Springsteen or a Bon Jovi or The Who or something like that. And then they drop in the pop acts and stuff like that. But I thought, whatever year that would have been, 2013, 2014, something like that. I thought Katy Perry was maybe my favorite halftime show. She was really good.
Yeah, that was a good one. Lady Gaga was also amazing.
Yeah.
And not to be that fan, both were Super Bowls that the Patriots won. But the Lady Gaga one, I mean, it was 28-3. At that point, like 25-3, it wasn't as bad as it got, but my team was down handedly at that halftime. And I was like the worst kind of person and the most stressed I've ever been. And I still was rocking out because Lady Gaga put on such a good show. So that just for context, but yeah, like Tom Petty, Bruce Springsteen, Prince, you know, there's been some, the hard correction from the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake situation.
Let's get safe.
It did lead to some, like, in my opinion, great halftime shows. I still am mad at them for bringing Justin Timberlake back.
Right.
And leaving Janet Jackson out of that.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Justin Timberlake's performance. I think he followed Lady Gaga. I think it was the year after Lady Gaga. And his performance had all the spice of a mayonnaise sandwich.
Which is remarkable because he is a tremendously talented performer, but it just wasn't that good of a show.
Like, no, it was terrible.
Okay.
Evidently, I have opinions.
Funny that.
About halftime shows. Okay, so Super Bowl predictions locked in. We'll come back next week and see which one of us was. I guess we had the same prediction, so we'll see if we were right.
Yeah, I promised to watch this one, unlike the Rumble.
Yes, please do. I don't want to be the only one who... I mean, at least I'm a football fan. I don't have to sit through something I'm not interested in. Let's talk NHL, shall we? Because, I mean, there's been a lot of COVID developments in the sports world this week. But the NHL in particular is having some scheduling issues with some rescheduled and, postponed games happening. Oh, yeah, the list just keeps going. I'm looking at the list right now. It just keeps. So what are we? We're February 4th today?
Yep.
So as of today, we got the Devils and Penguins postponed. We got the Sabres and Islanders postponed. We got the Wild and Avalanche postponed. February 6th, Rangers and Devils, Sabres and Bruins, Coyotes and Wild. And that's just 2 days, Matt.
The tweet I saw this morning was from Pierre LeBrun, and it was far from subtle, that said, and I'm paraphrasing, NHL fans would be advised to keep as much of an eye on win percentage as wins at this point, because it's becoming pretty clear not every team is going to get to 56 games. And I don't know, I got a few different thoughts on that. I think it's fine. Like, baseball had this problem at one point. Like, the Marlins and Cardinals had played like 8 games and everyone else had played like 22, and you're like, how are you ever going to, you know, a couple of weekend series of complete doubleheaders isn't going to fix this. But they got through their season and they started cutting games that weren't going to matter towards the end. So that's a possibility for the NHL. But the thing that sticks out to me is this idea that they have left a week or two, I think it's upwards of 10 days after the season, where they say that's where they're going to drop in these canceled games. And they don't have to start the playoffs right away. And to me, that makes sense. I think it only, you know, you should leave that sort of window. But I wonder what happens if, let's say, the Canadian division starts, for the most part, like, gets through this pretty well. Because so far, we haven't had any canceled games up here. I think at some point you will see it, but probably not with the same level of frequency that you're seeing it in the U.S. Does Canada have to wait a week and a half for the U.S. to finish their games? Or let's say Montreal's going to play Edmonton in the first round. Edmonton has 2 games to make up in that week, and Montreal's just sitting around. If Montreal's the higher seed, like, does it behoove you to sit around and do nothing while the other team, you know, still plays their games and makes up? I was very much in favor of this window at the end of the season to make up some games. I do think it's getting to a point rapidly where that window is not going to be big enough and they're just going to use it to fit in whatever they can. But I do wonder what it does to the integrity of the rest of your season if a number one seed sits around for a week and a half while a number four plays some, not meaningless, but not huge games, but at least stays active and then maybe swamps you in the first 2 games.
That's a really good question, because there's always the sleeper team in the playoffs that because they've been playing playoff hockey for the last 2 weeks or month of the regular season, they at least make a challenge or put up a fight against the top seeded team, or in some cases completely eliminate
of
them.
Course.
And it, you know, it does you no good to be sitting around and you know, practicing and scrimmaging, but maybe not playing full on hockey. I do wonder if by the time we get there, given the condensed season, like maybe a week or of rest that your opponent doesn't have could be more of a benefit than it is in other years.
Sure.
But I think that's a decent question. Like, you know, you're giving someone an extra week of runway potentially.
Yeah.
The extra week of in, these could be meaningful games, right? Like, what it, you know, some of these teams could be a point or two away from making the playoffs. Like, they could have.
Like, let's just stick in Canada. Let's say Montreal's in first at the end of the year. They are locked in. They finish. They're going to be first. There's still a battle for fourth, and the NHL decides we're wiping these games out. And I don't know. Let's say Winnipeg is 2 points out of the playoffs and Calgary is the fourth place team. And Winnipeg goes, you just canceled 3 games against Ottawa. You don't think I was making up 2 points in 3 games against Ottawa? Right? Like, or whoever the bottom feeder in a division might be. Just what is the definition of meaningless, and to who is it meaningless, right? Like, Winnipeg and Ottawa are two teams that are out of the playoffs, but Winnipeg's going to tell you, I was getting the 2 points I needed. You need to reschedule those games. And I'm not just bringing that up to be a dick to the Sens. It's just the what looks to be the most realistic situation in Canada, where most of our listeners are. I think it's going to be fascinating.
I also think that, you know, let's say we're talking about regular season going into playoffs, at least the first round is still Canadian teams on Canadian teams. So there's not going to be, because, I mean, let's call a spade, it's mostly American games that are getting canceled.
For now,
things can change, absolutely. And by and large, you know, Canada's done a pretty, I mean, when you compare it to America, Canada's done a pretty good job at making sure, you know, protocols are followed. There's just, I think this speaks largely to what the regions are doing, not just what the teams are doing.
Yeah.
And in general, Canada's been much more strict than the States. I know that bar is low, but they have.
No, it's true.
So you're probably not looking at as much of a, you know, your American opponent is playing games while you're resting, but it, you know, that's definitely going to affect, you're still potentially, if they want all the playoffs to start at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, they may have the Canadian teams waiting around.
As long as all of Canada's wait, like as long as everyone is waiting around, like 1 versus 4 and 2 versus 3 are all waiting. It sucks, but at least it's even. I think that's my biggest concern is, you know, you bust your ass for an entire season to win whatever division you're in, and then you sit around for an extra week and a half while your opponent, you know, is keeping their legs loose and getting in. And you referenced it. It was a fair point that this happens in a lot of years, not with the extra break, but you're home and cooled in first place and somebody's been busting their ass for the last week and a half. Every game's been a playoff game. Every game's been a must win. Sometimes they do get the jump on you. But I think that possible break at the end for some teams that isn't a break for others is going to be really interesting to see what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, further to that, if they can't get all the games rescheduled and win percentage ends up being more of an important thing, I can see NHL fans raging that all teams did not play an even 56 game season, because if there's one thing that hockey fans love, it's change.
Yeah, no, exactly. I sure had to play all my games against Tampa. I didn't get to play all my games against Detroit or whatever it might be, right? Like I'm sitting out and somebody else is in. I think it's really easy, and right now, fans, for the most part, are being patient and applauding the league for being flexible, for being proactive, but somebody, as sure as we're sitting here right now enjoying a beer, somebody is getting hosed at the end of the year, and they will not be anywhere near as forgiving of the league.
And wait for the conversations of, this team got 2 games against this opponent canceled, but, you know, this team got to play, like you said, all their games against Detroit, or this team didn't have as hard of a, oh my God, I'm exhausted.
That's coming. It's coming. That will happen as sure as we're sitting here. So to me,
it's really fun when your team is that team, by the way, when your team is the team that other teams want to play to increase their goal differential. Yep. That's fun. It's even more fun when they play all their games at 10 p.m.
Yes. And I've been up to watch some of those. I had a little conversation with our buddy Graham Nichols about what a good place my life is in on a Tuesday night, staying up to watch the Sens and Oilers. My team's not even playing, but I want to see this. So I'll go make another drink and hang around. Like, just go to bed, man. This has nothing to do with you. But no, I want to hang around. I want to watch, see how you people are doing.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a little fun for you.
You're not doing that.
No, we're not okay. Not even a little bit. I can't remember if I tweeted this or I think it was in my drafts. I went through a bunch of my drafts today of like the tweets you don't send.
Yeah.
And I think this was in there. I wish my folder
bigger.
It's a dangerous
space. I just send them. I wish my draft folder was bigger.
I suppose it is a good thing that mine's somewhat big. And I have some self-control sometimes.
Right.
But one of the things I said that was last week, when the Sens started their road trip against Vancouver, And I was on the air Monday through Wednesday. So like full disclosure, I wouldn't be staying up for these games if I wasn't on the air. I am a morning person. My brain is not functional past like 8 o'clock in that. And even when I stayed up for these games, I had to watch the highlights the next day because I couldn't really formulate opinions on what was happening or remember anything because
right.
I was exhausted. So I stayed up because I wanted to be able to say I did and join in on the Sens fan.
Sure.
Masochism, I guess you could call it. And I said something, I tweeted something like, if staying up till 1 a.m. watching two of the worst teams in the NHL go head to head isn't living the dream, I don't know what is. And that's pretty much my mood for all of these games. Cause like with all due respect to Edmonton, I mean, they're 6-6, they're still at 500. And for a team with Connor McDavid, that is a vast disappointment in my opinion.
Of course.
And you know, sure enough, they got wins against Ottawa. So who am I to talk, but like staying up to watch your team just get pounded, you know, night in and night out. That's a new kind of self hurt right there. That's the opposite of self care. Going to bed for these games is my self-care.
I think you're, it's funny, because the Leafs aren't that far removed from being that team, but never to the point where, like, you're going out west for 3 games. You weren't going out west for 9, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to play Calgary for 3, Edmonton for 3, Vancouver for 2, and come home, where it lasts for, like, the Sens have been a late-night team for, like, a week and a half now. And yep. That is a different level of, my favorite team's playing. I'm going to stay up. I'm committed. I'm committed for that Western road trip that I'm used to of 3 games, 3 different teams. I'm less committed to the Flames kicking me in the teeth for 4 straight nights or whatever it might be before moving on to the next Western city. It is a different type of endurance that rebuilding teams are being asked or asking their fan bases to endure right now.
That is very true. Like I could deal with the 3:10 PM games for basically 2 separate weeks of the year, right? The California road trip, the Western Canada road trip.
And that's it. You're done.
This has been 2 straight weeks.
And with way more of them to come. Like you're going so back out there in like 3 weeks. Yeah.
And like, okay, so the last game was Tuesday night at 10 o'clock and it's now Thursday. I'm still tired. I'm 31. I can't recover from this as fast anymore. I obviously was on the air yesterday, so I had to get up at a decent time. I slept in a bit and was still exhausted. Like, you know, when you're so tired, your joints hurt. That's what I had. That's what I still have. It's been 2 days. I got a full night's sleep last night, Matt. I'm still tired. I'm so happy they're playing at a normal time tonight. I don't care how badly they get beat, and it's gonna happen. I am so tired.
It's the
tired.
Habs, right?
It's the Habs.
Habs look good.
Yeah. It's because oh my god, do they ever look good?
Yeah.
What's their goal differential right now? Like +24?
Seems like they've played like 7 of their 10 games against the Canucks. So.
Oh,
every time you turn around, it's just, look, there's Tyler Toffoli scoring on the Canucks again. Like, it's every night.
Josh Anderson?
Yeah.
Like, who, where did they come from? I know, like, I expected them to be, like, if I'm being honest right now, my kind of, like, ideal or prediction scenario for the North Division was Toronto, Winnipeg, Montreal, maybe Edmonton.
Right.
Or swap out Edmonton and Vancouver. I thought Toronto was going to be at the top and then Montreal would be in there,
right?
In the playoffs, but not as dominant as they have been. It blows my mind.
And it's getting harder and harder for me, right? Because I had Toronto, Edmonton, Calgary in the upper tier, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Montreal in the second tier, kind of fighting for that fourth playoff spot. And then obviously Ottawa doing their own thing. It's getting harder and harder the further this goes. I needed the Habs to show me something, right? That was a 24th place team that got invited to the playoffs and had a good 3 weeks. Added a good forward and a backup goalie, and you go, all right, let's see. They're off to a hot start, and it's getting harder and harder to say, show me, right? Because they're showing me, like, every night they're beating somebody up. And so we'll see. It's early, I guess, is always the qualifier, but it's getting less and less early with every night. But I guess we'll see when they get matched up against somebody other than the Canucks for a couple games here. I guess that's going to be the Sens. So good luck with all that.
Thank you.
Yeah, but they've been interesting to watch and better certainly than I expected. I don't think anyone expects them to keep the pace that they're on, but they have certainly shown, you know, at least thus far, they're not going to be in that second tier that I had them. They will be right there near the top of this division.
No, and for the argument of it's early. Like, I get that, you know, it's 10 games, 12 games, and depending on what team you are, but, yeah. You know, this is also a condensed season. And really, you're probably looking at almost the 20-game mark in a regular season right now.
Sure, yeah.
Right, proportionally. Like, I think I've seen enough of Montreal to know that this isn't a fluke. Whether or not they continue at this pace,
right.
That's arguable. But I think that they're definitely going to be a playoff team unless they have some sort of horrific fall from grace. But I mean, like, they're a scary team right now.
One of the things that I said kind of at the top of the season was all those points that you get at the beginning when it's sloppy. And I sort of expected the Leafs to benefit kind of like they have because they have so many good finishers. And with a short camp and no exhibition games, I expected the first week or two to be really sloppy. And it was. But all those points still count, right? So whether it's Montreal, whether it's Toronto, who also, in my opinion, hasn't played as well as their record would suggest, those points are all still going to count. So at this point, Montreal, as you've suggested, barring something ridiculous, they're making the playoffs, which I thought was going to be life and death for them. So I don't think they're this good, but they're in now. All those points count.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, maybe...
Can I vent just on one other NHL thing before we move
on? Go for it.
See, because I got this issue, and it's not new. I hate every single one across the entire league where you find a word that relates to your team during the national anthem, and you yell it out. I hate them all. I hate them all. In Calgary, it's the "Oh, say, can you see?" And you're like, "Oh, I get it, because Calgary starts with C, and we have a C on our shirt, so I'm gonna yell the letter C." And you're like, "Shut up!" In Washington, it's the Rockets' red glare, because our shirts are red, guys. We're wearing red shirts, so I'm gonna yell during the "Shut up!" They're all terrible, but the worst. One, the biggest offender is Winnipeg.
No!
And they're...
I was just going to say Winnipeg's the exception.
No! It's True North. You're yelling the name of a corporation. It's not a lyric in the anthem. It's yelling the name of your corporate overlord. And it was bad enough. You know what? In your own building, whatever it seats, 3,040 or whatever that tiny ass building seats, when you do it, fine. I tolerate it. It's your thing. I don't really tolerate it. I still think it's awful. Now, Michaela, now the fans aren't there. It's just the corporate overlords that run the building, and they are playing a recording of the fans screaming it during the building is empty, but they are playing a recording of fans yelling the name of their own corporation. And even worse, they're not just playing a recording of the fans yelling it. They're then playing a recording of the fans applauding themselves for yelling it, like they always do during the "True North." We're so clever. You're not clever. It's ridiculous. And it's worse now. It's worse now that it's a corporation playing it for themselves and then playing a recording of the fans cheering it. It makes me, as you can tell, a little upset. I don't like it. It's bad. Everyone should stop. And it's gross when the building is empty. End of rant. Where's my beer?
That was awesome. I'm with you on the, when the building's empty, it's weird. Like, what are you doing, man? Let the fans do it. I will excuse Winnipeg on it. I kind of like the True North thing because at least it was somewhat like,
no,
just kind of naturally awful. Fit into the anthem. It was somewhat
creative. It's worse when you do it in my building. It's worse when you do it in someone else's building. Shut up.
I get
there's
that.
35 of you in a 20,000 seat building yelling stupid. I hate it.
But with Winnipeg fans, I think I give them a pass because they're just so happy to have their team back that they're willing to praise a corporate overlord for it.
That died right? in 2012. End of the first year, you're done. I hate it.
Well, Matt, tell us how you really feel.
Wow, I'm kind of getting hot and sweaty over like that was I was getting upset. Just break. I was getting upset.
Correct. Do you have another beer? Are you good?
I've got a little bit of this one left. I got to tell you, it's not a bad beer, but I'm getting more of the coriander than almost anything else. They did say it was kind of the citrus and coriander versus the stout portion of it. In a mashup, and it's fine. It's not like I'm not enjoying it, but I'm definitely getting more of that part of it than the stout.
If there's one thing I don't care for in a beer, it's coriander.
Yeah, it's almost like dropping a bouillon cube into your beer or something.
Yeah, like that's a soup flavor.
Yeah, it's weird.
I will say this beer, the unnamed pale ale from Mash Paddle Brewing, mm-hmm. is very tasty.
Okay.
It's a nice kind of, you know, it's basically exactly, we talked about this before, but a pale ale can mean so many things. Yeah. But this is exactly what you expect when you open a pale ale, which in my opinion is a light IPA.
Yeah, okay.
A pale ale should always be a light version of an IPA, like somewhere between a lager or a blonde and IPA.
Right.
Like somewhere in that middle. A lot of breweries play fast and loose with that term. But this is pretty much exactly what I would expect. A little more on the light side, but there's nice hoppiness to it. It's got some good flavor and, you know, it's 5.5%. So it's not too dangerous. The other beer I picked up because I will say this small batch dispatch, like the first month that I got was mostly IPAs, but it had some other kind of random ones in there that admittedly I still haven't gotten to because they're just really out there.
Right.
This one was almost exclusively IPAs. And pale ales, okay. which is my jam. Yeah. That's right up my alley. So I was kind of deciding which one to have tonight. And the other one I picked up was a hazy IPA from Common Good Brewing.
Hmm.
But it was a 7.5.
Hey.
And I went, not when a mic is in front of me.
That's I get dangerous. That. Yeah. We've seen a few dangerous. Of those. I've got a few more out there from the Bob Cajun Brewing Company. I've still got one or two left from Ridge Rock and I don't know. I try not to shy away when they say they're 8, 9, 10%, but yeah, you got to be careful, right? And you can really only bring one at that point. So,
absolutely. One more hockey update on the COVID side of things. Not a great one, but the NWHL has suspended their season. I can't remember if we talked about this on the show last week, but we saw some teams start to pull out. From the tournament, the Metropolitan Riveters were the first ones to drop out. The Connecticut Whale shortly after, mm-hmm. and there was some, I guess, confusion or mystery around why the Connecticut Whale dropped out. And you know, it was widely speculated that it was COVID related.
Right.
But a lot of people started to say, like, you know, we haven't heard of any COVID tests. We don't know what this is about. A day or two later, the NWHL announced that they were suspending their season because basically. It was not so much that there were so many positive tests that they couldn't get it under control. It was that they couldn't ensure the safety of the players and staff and everyone working on it. Once you get a few COVID cases in there, if the proper protocols aren't in place, it gets really hard to manage. And there were a lot of criticisms about the bubble in Lake Placid and the fact that, you know, it wasn't really a bubble
right.
and that you could bring players in day of if you wanted to for a game and there wasn't a lot of quarantine going on.
Yeah, no good.
So, I mean, it's really unfortunate for the players and though, you know, the people working the social media handles and the, you know, the people who I talk to a lot who are covering the team, you know, it's really disappointing. And, I will rant for one second, not a long run, but it as someone who's covered women's hockey for a very long time and watched women's hockey for a very long time, I get really sick of the mainstream media, the big outlets only coming in when there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And only coming in to write stories about women's hockey when there's something controversial. I didn't see most major outlets talking about the CWHL until it folded. I didn't see many people talking about the bubble unless they were specific to women's hockey until the NWHL bubble until it was postponed.
Right.
or the Barstool stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just really irks me that once again, we're seeing this where unless there's a controversy, hockey media, the mainstream hockey media don't talk about women's hockey. And here we are, there's a controversy and should it be covered by media? Absolutely. It is news, but please also cover the games, cover it like you do other hockey. Maybe we'll actually get it to grow.
What's that mean? If you don't support me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best? Well,
that's just it. Because we all know that eventually we're heading towards a world where there is, that there is going to be a sustainable, viable league for women to play in.
Right.
And when that happens and everyone wants to talk about it, I'm going to be paying attention to the people who I know have covered this game mm-hmm. for years, regardless of what was happening, because they cared about the actual hockey being played. That's all I got.
This was super disappointing because it's hard to get mad for me. They did the right thing. When they couldn't ensure safety anymore, when they couldn't ensure, that everyone was going to be kept safe, they couldn't ensure the integrity of the tournament anymore, who's going to have played who and in what situation, and they weren't really left with a choice. But I had seen, and granted, it's because I follow the right people online and stuff like that, I had seen more attention on this than I'd ever seen for the NWHL. Now, did it stack up against what I had seen over the years for the CWHL? That I'm not sure of, right? A lot of this would be because I follow a ton of Leafs accounts, and a bunch of them had gotten big onto the Toronto Six, right? For good reason, making their debut. This was doing well, and they were getting a bunch of really good attention on, we mentioned last week, broadcasting their games on Twitch, and the broadcast that they were doing didn't sound like some dink with a ham radio sitting 3,000 miles away. Like, they were broadcasting a good product. And then you'll correct me. If I'm wrong, the semifinals and the finals were going to be on national television in the U.S.
Yep. Yeah. NBC and Sportsnet here in Canada.
Yeah, we're going to be covering. I knew we had it. We usually will pick it up.
Yeah.
And what, but that was huge. And so this, it's not very eloquent. This sucked, right? Like,
sucks.
Yeah.
Sucks so much.
They were on a bit of a roll. And I guess when you do it in a condensed situation, like it was just going to be a couple of weeks in a bubble, it almost had that Olympic vibe where even for people who you're just trying to introduce to this thing, you're not asking them to make a 6-month commitment. You're asking them to follow it for a couple of weeks, see if they dig it, and people can do that. And it seemed like that was happening. And so it sucked when, when the Riveters pulled out. It sucked when then it started to look like this thing was in jeopardy. It sucked when another team had to pull out and then they just had to shut down the whole thing. And I'm not criticizing them because they did it for the right reasons, but it just sucks. It's just disappointing. And maybe you have more info on this than me. I noticed when they put out their press release, they said it was being suspended, not canceled. Do you think that's just a word they used and I'm reading too much into it? Or do you think they're going to circle back and try and at least do the semis and finals at some point down the road? Or is this just, that's it for this season?
That's a really good question. And I don't have any further info than what's been shared, but I did notice the suspended wording. And it certainly it does leave it open for, okay, are they going to go try to maybe get a more structured bubble to be able to do this safely and leave it open?
Just bring your four teams back, right? Do a 2-3 semi, yep, and a 2-3 final, whatever you need to do. Like, maybe that's doable. I don't know.
I don't know. I hope that they're able to get something worked out in the near future that allows for the safety of the players and everybody involved. Like, I think that should be priority, and I hope it is. I, you know, there, in other kind of women talking news this week, the PWHPA announced a new showcase that's going to be taking place at Madison Square Garden, which is super exciting. I hope that they're looking at this and going, okay, we can't allow anything like this to happen.
Right.
Right. Like, we need to make sure that we are as safe as we can possibly be. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they are. I think, you know, how are you not at this point? And I also think that, you know, Madison Square Garden's not going to let just anybody in without a plan.
That's right.
For something like that. So I hope that they're looking at this as a lesson learned. It's an unfortunate, costly lesson for the players. Yeah. But I think that's, you know, it's some exciting news in the world of women's hockey that I would love it if the mainstream hockey media were talking about that as well.
Yep.
Right. More so than just
about the most famous arena in the world hosting a women's showcase game in New York City. It's going to be a big deal.
Very likely and you know, with all due respect to the NWHL, the most well-known players, female hockey players in the world, are not playing in it.
Right.
They're part of the PWHPA because they're boycotting North American hockey right now until they find a more sustainable league. You know, the Marie-Philippe Poulins, the Hillary Knights, the Brianna Deckers, they're the ones in the PWHPA who are likely going to be part of the showcase.
It's going to be awesome.
And I'm not saying that's taking anything away from the NWHL.
We wanted to see that work, but
there's a reason why mainstream media should be talking about it. I mean, we're a year removed from the Beijing Olympics now, and that, you know, during those 2 weeks, everyone wants to talk about women's hockey.
Yep.
And then it completely falls off. Well, this is your time to talk about it now. You have something to talk about it. Go talk about it, please.
Completely agree with that. Yeah. It's great hockey, and we've talked about it on the show before. Whether it's the PWHPA, you know, barnstorming through your town, whether it's the NWHL, give it a look. Like, it's good hockey.
Oh, absolutely. It's hockey. You know, that hockey that you love watching during the Olympics. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's those women, right? And, you know, I was really bummed when the CWHL folded, because that was, at the time, you know, the best players in the world were playing there. Yep. And it was, you know, it was my NHL, and it really sucks that they weren't able to. I'm hoping that they're going to get back there one day. That's where the PWHPA kind of formed, was after the fallout of that.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that that's down the road. But if you like the Olympic hockey, man, like, give it a watch. It honestly is amazing, and it's important. It's important to support these leagues and these associations and work towards getting a sustainable and equitable and a fair league for women to play in.
This wasn't on the agenda. Can I ask you one last thing before we wrap her up? We're seeing at the Aussie Open, this is not the first issue, but you know, you had to get yourself to two different points to get on chartered flights to go to the Aussie Open. And on one of them, maybe both, but for sure on one, there was a positive test case. So as soon as everybody arrived in Australia, it was straight into quarantine. And you were seeing some real douchey stuff on social media about how unfair it was and how you should be. Everybody knew before you went, this was a possibility. Once you get there and find yourself in isolation or in quarantine in your hotel to start complaining about it, to me, came off really tone deaf, especially inside a country that had done a very nice job handling all of this. That storm sort of subsided, and now we are back in a place where I can't even remember the number. It was in the hundreds of people had to isolate again because a hotel security guard had tested positive. Now, all you had to do to get out of that isolation, that wasn't a full 14 days. It was just test negative and we carry on. But for me, this is the most recent and closest comparison to what we're going to see at the Olympics from people coming from around the world where it won't be on charter flights. Instead of, you know, several hundred athletes arriving on your doorstep, it's going to be upwards of 15,000 athletes. And you're talking about one sport, right? With just the tennis group. Now you're talking about a Summer Olympic Games where there's 100 sports. And I just... I've been on the record 100 times saying I don't think sports is a priority right now, and I don't think any of them should be playing. At the same time, once they're on TV, yes, I'm watching. But the NHL and the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL, they're paying millions of dollars to test everybody repeatedly, and they're still struggling. You're about to bring 15,000 people to Japan, where 80% of the public has said, hey, stop, we don't want this anymore. But the Japanese government and the IOC are on the hook for billions of dollars. And some of those are coming from places where, quite frankly, they can't afford to test properly, right? You're coming from different parts of the world, different economic realities. I guess two questions, because I no longer need to make my opinion known. The way I'm framing these questions has made my opinion pretty clear. A, do you think the Summer Games in Tokyo are going to happen this year? And B, do you think they should happen this year?
Oh, Lord. Well, I'll answer the should first. If we are where we are right now, no, absolutely not. And added to that, is it all that easy to cancel a gigantic international sports tournament with a couple weeks' notice? Probably not.
Right.
You know, my gut instinct is no, they shouldn't happen. Whether or not they will is a whole different question. And like, listen, I'm a massive Olympics fan. I love the Olympics. Break my heart for this not to happen. But man, it's a global pandemic.
Yeah.
Right? Like, how do you justify having the Olympics during this? And, you know, it's one thing to have a crowd of people, whether, you know, even if you don't have spectators, you've got athletes, you've got trainers, you've got media, you've got staff working the buildings. That's enough to make a decent crowd. It's one thing for that aspect of it, right? It's another thing to bring thousands of people from all across the world to one location and then send them back.
Redisperse them.
This is like, we talked about this almost a year.
Spread, you could imagine.
Honestly, that's exactly what it is. I distinctly remember, like, it was probably exactly a year ago. I was on the drive with Ian Mendez and we were talking about whether or not the Tokyo Olympics should happen. You know, COVID was starting to take to, I think it was kind of hitting Italy at this point. We knew it was probably coming here.
Right.
You know, is it a good idea? And my exact point was, it's not just the crowds. It's the people coming from different countries and then going back home, right? Like, it's travel is a huge factor in this. And it's one thing to not have to put a bunch of people in one place at one time. It's another thing to bring them from all over the world to one place at one time.
Yeah.
And you could argue that, oh, there's quarantine and you have to quarantine when you get back. Well, what happens between when you leave the hotel in Tokyo and when you come back to Canada and get back to home?
Right.
Like, are you, you know, you're going to be going through an airport. You're going to be, sure, you're wearing a mask, you're sanitizing your hands. That doesn't always stop it.
Nope.
Right. Like, yeah, you can quarantine, but not all countries have the same regulations of quarantine. And
well, that's the biggest thing, even coming in, right? Like, let's say the G20 is largely vaccinated, which seems wildly optimistic at this point.
You
got like 160 countries coming to this thing. And I'm sorry, but the overwhelming majority of them have been pushed to the back of the vaccination line. You know, that's economics, unfortunately. But their athletes are still invited to the Olympics. There's no way of creating a standardized. And I wonder, like, I don't blame the people of Japan at all for 80% of them saying, I don't want this. We're on the hook for however many billions of dollars, and we don't even get to go. Like, that's half the fun of hosting the Olympics, is being at the opening ceremony, is having the athletes there and attending all these events that maybe, you know, we criticized people for, and rightfully so, when it comes to women's hockey or whatever. Canada should care about hockey, men's and women's, all the time. I don't care about badminton any time other than the Olympics. But if I turn on CBC and there's a Canadian playing, all right, I'll probably watch, right? But if you're the people of Japan going, I'm paying the bill, and all these people are coming, bringing the disease and the virus back here, and we don't get to actually have the benefit of enjoying the games, screw it. Like, just, yep. I want no part of this. I obviously, I think it shouldn't happen, but the more and more rhetoric that keeps coming out seems to suggest, we think we can do this. And I don't know what gives anybody the balls to say that, looking at what these multi-billion dollar leagues here in North America are investing and still not controlling it. You're looking at the Aussie Open. They're having... They're saying, you know, you one person tested positive, it put 600 people in isolation. Yeah, but only for like a day or two till they test negative. How many times can you do that inside an Olympic village and keep delaying the canoe kayak final for another day?
Yeah.
And then someone else tests positive and for another day. It's not going to work. This isn't
exactly
doable.
And think of the risk of like, you know, what if you can't reschedule that game? This isn't like a 56 game NHL right. season. This is for some of these sports, this is one event and you're done.
Right. And so how much is it going to cost for, I'm throwing it out. I don't even know. The Congo is going to send 7 athletes at a gigantic expense compared to, you know, what we invest in sport here in Canada, which you could argue is underfunded, to then maybe get there and not even have your event. To me, this is,
not to mention the risk you're taking of even going there to begin with,
yeah.
right? Like you're sending your athletes there on in, assuming publicly funded dimes that yep. they could, what if they get sick? I'm sure there's going to be insurance, situations worked out, but
right.
you know, it's what just, if they get seriously sick that you're on the hook for that.
Right. And what does that do for, you know, during the opening ceremonies, the parade of nations, instead of talking about whatever we're talking about, well, 3 athletes from this contingent and 4 athletes from that country and 2 staff from this are in quarantine and other people weren't. Is this even something you want to be bothered with, right? Like,
no.
Is it going to hold a shadow over it? Look, the Olympics is awesome. I hate the IOC. I love the Olympics. That's something I wrestle with all the time. This is a mistake, and every day that they don't cancel it is another day that you are forcing people around the world to take risks, going to the gym, going to qualifying tournaments, going to placement competitions, you know, preparing for this thing that shouldn't happen. And every day that you don't cancel it is another day, like I said, worldwide, that people are taking those risks. And in my opinion, the IOC needs to let people off the hook now. Like, we're not having this, and those people can then stand down for a little while, worry about staying healthy, worry about following public protocol, rather than, you know, having the IOC go, no, we're doing this, which means despite what my government says or my local authority say, I got to train, I got to go to the gym, I got to get together with my teammates, whatever it might be. This has got so many ripple effects all over the place in almost every country on earth, and I every time I see something like this story out of the Aussie Open, I'm just like, I can't believe we're even still having this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's absolutely true. And I think what's going to happen is countries are going to have to start pulling out
yeah.
exactly like we saw last year.
Yeah.
I know people have been pretty critical of Canada for not doing that yet, but I do think that you're going to start to see that. And that's what's going to be the deciding factor in whether or not this actually happens.
Hope you're right.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, I think we've taken up almost an hour and a half of the listener's time.
Nice.
So we should wrap things up. But I'll get one final thought from mm-hmm. you, Matt. Final thought on the beer you're drinking. I know you gave yeah. some review of it earlier, but what's your final thought?
The winterized Belgian white stout. Pretty good. If you're looking for, you know, something to experiment with, something to try, something a little different, I would recommend this. It was a good drink, no problem with it at all. But if you're someone who's strictly looking for that stout taste, this is probably not what you're looking for. It is not I'm not criticizing them for it. It said that right up front. This is a mashup. So if you like to experiment, check it out. If you're just looking for a stout, probably look past this one.
Fair enough. And my final thought on the Mash Paddle Brewing Company, unnamed pale ale, is it's very tasty and delicious. And I don't know if that's helpful for anybody because I don't even know if you can get this in the LCBO. But if you find yourself in Brantford, Ontario, 1, I apologize. And 2,
God help
you. Check out to Mash Paddle Brewing Co. They're very, very good. And this beer is very tasty. So that's my final thought.
If you do find yourself in Brantford, couple of bar recommendations, the Piston Broke good chicken wings and beers. And McGarnagle's. Now, I haven't been to Brantford in like a year or so, so maybe these places haven't done so well with the pan. Oh, and Wacky Wings. It's kind of weird. It's kind of got this weird family-friendly vibe despite being a bar. Those are my Brantford bar recommendations, place to get a good beer. And check out the Bell City Brewery.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And oh my God, I want to go to a bar so bad right now.
Yeah.
all right. With that, we will wrap things up. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Tall Can Audio. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shrides, S-C-H-R-E-I-D-S. And we'll see you next time on Tall Can Audio.
Peace.
Did you see that?
Yep. There's an hour you're never getting back.
I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the f*** he wants.
Okay, I'm going to call that a wrap. You can find tons more TCA at tallcanaudio.com. Ba-dum-bum.